We're going to talk about Dat Elohim. What does it mean to know Hashem? And the first piece is from a piece of Rav Kook, which is called Dat Elohim. And it's considered to be one of the most central works of Rav Kook, as well as one of the most difficult pieces of Rav Kook, where he basically deals with how does one know Hashem? What does it mean to know Hashem? And how does one know Hashem? And how does one know that they know Hashem? Pretty important stuff. So today we're going to just do the first 2.5 sentences of that article. And we'll begin there. So, it goes like this. Kol chizayon. Anything that you see, anything that appears to you. In other words, for Rav Kook, chizayon would be any object. Okay. Ben muchashi ben sikhli, whether it's a physical object, something that you see in a muchashi way with your senses, like the table, or sikhli, or whether the object is an idea, right? But anything that's presented to you, whether it's something that's presented to you physically or something that's presented to you intellectually or spiritually, whether the object is intellectual, spiritual, cultural, or physical, right? When that chizayon, when that object comes to you, right, establishes itself before you in a relationship, right? Pikisha yichusit, a relationship. You encounter it in a relative way. Right? You're relating to it. Eitzel kol chash v'kol maskil. Through a person that, you know, whether it's meeting you on a sensual level, in terms of your senses, or meeting you on an intellectual level. But it's this object is meeting you, okay? Miyad hu ma'arer regesh o machshava, it immediately arouses within you a feeling or a thought, shikfula, which is actually double, okay? You distinguish two facets to what's happening here, okay? Echad shehi shtayim, one that's actually two, right? So there's one encounter with an object, whether it's intellectual, physical, spiritual, right? And you're relating to that object. Mitzad atzmo shel chizayon, so one side is the object itself. Umitzad ta'arav hamityachasim el nosei askan, all based on the characters or its appearances that apply to or relate to the subject that is involved, askan, the subject, which is you, right, in these things. Okay? So what is he doing? Rav Kook is essentially borrowing Kantian terminology, right? And he's basically explaining this. And this is like the first step in knowing Hashem, which is to first understand what knowing anything or anyone, physically or spiritually, means in the first place. So before he applies this to Hashem, he's going to deal with the nature of knowledge, right? And he's going to basically say that knowledge is relative, right? There's an object, but you never meet the object itself. You meet your perception of the object. In other words, when I hold this magic marker, I'm not touching the magic marker itself. I'm touching my feeling of the magic marker, right? But the magic marker, as it appears to me, is subjective. There is an objective magic marker. There is an objective marker. But I, although meeting it, am perceiving a perception of it. Okay? And it's subjective. I'll give you an example. And I've given this example before. If I was able to give you glasses that would enable you microscopic vision, this room wouldn't look this way anymore, would it? Right? The colors, the textures of this room would change. So that's the question. Is the table brown? Or does the table appear to be brown relative to the way you're looking at it? But it might be a different color if you look at it differently. Right? Is the table solid? Well, the table appears to you solid, but it's very possible with microscopic viewing that we might see that it's actually very dynamic and it's not solid, it's not stable, it's not static, it's very dynamic. So what it is, there is an objective reality, but you are meeting it, but perceiving your perception of it. Okay? That's super important, right, to understand. The room that you're in is in you. There is an objective room, but what it looks like, we will never know. We will only know how it looks to us based on how uniquely we're relating to it. Okay? Which therefore means that the room, as you know it, lives in you. Okay? Lives in you. And that's what it says in the Zohar. If you go to the Zohar number 3, all right, the Zohar asks a question, why is it that the deceased must have their eyes closed? When somebody dies, it's very possible that their eyes open up. Their eyes open up. So they have to close the eyelids, or they put clay shards over their eyes. So the Zohar is asking, why halakhically do you have to close or cover the eyes of the deceased? And this is what it says. Look at the English. The head of the yeshiva opened the discussion with this verse. Joseph shall put his hand upon your eyes. When Yaakov is on his way for that incredible event where he's going to meet Yosef, Hashem says, don't worry, right? Yosef yashit yado aleinecha. What does that mean? So the Zohar is saying that he was concerned whether someone would close his eyes when he dies. And Hashem is consoling him to know that don't worry, that when you die, Yosef will close your eyes. So the Zohar asks that is a glad tiding. So Yaakov was happy to hear that. Why? He inquired, why is it, the head of the Rosh Hashiva, the Rosh Hashiva, inquired, why is it required to close eyes of the deceased? He responds, because the eyes are the colors of the world, and the appearance and the shape of this world is contained in them. Therefore, with the closing of the eyes, he closes off to the deceased this world and its appearances. What did the Zohar just say? Yeah.
When someone dies, he's finally able to tap in true reality and not just this image that we've perceived of the world.
No. Close, but not quite. Yes.
I'm saying this thing that ties it down to this world is our perception, and that's kind of embodied in the fact that we can see and we can perceive things with our eyes. So when we close our eyes, we cut off that perception, and we go... Presumably after death, we're at a different perception.
Exactly. In other words, this is a perception. When you leave this world, when you die, you're no longer going to encounter reality merely through the 5 senses, right? You're actually able to view reality from a different perspective and have a new perception of reality. Therefore, what you have here is what Kant described. Kant asked this basic question. Do we see reality as it is, or do we see our perception of reality? This was a huge shift. This was revolutionary. Everybody just assumed that what I see is what is. Nobody ever distinguished whether there's a difference between the object and your subjective perception of it. Right? So most people perceived or assumed that our minds are like a camera, and it's just simply picking up what's there, and what I see is what is. And he asked the question, is it possible that what we see is not what is, but our perception of what is? And he decided, yes, we are living in a subjective perception of reality. They have to be very careful. We're not cutting out reality. There is an objective reality. That reality, that objective reality is coming towards you and meeting you. But when you meet that objective reality, you are getting a subjective perception of the reality. Okay? And so when a person dies, they are closing their perception of this world to open up the channel of a new perception of the next world. But it's not a different reality, right? It's the same reality, but a new perception of that same reality. Just like there is a reality called table, but I don't know what it really looks like. Right now it appears to be brown and long and square or rectangular, right? And hard, stiff. But if I viewed it from a different angle, I might see something else. But there is an objective essence. So in the language of Kant, he called reality as it is noumena, and reality as it's perceived by us as phenomena, right? And everything that you are seeing is in the realm of the subjective, okay? And that's actually what we say in the bracha when we are called up to the Torah. Asher natan lanu Torah temet v'chaye olam nata b'tochenu. You've given us the Torah of Emet, right? But you have planted within us Chaye Olam. What does that mean, Chaye Olam?
Subjective nature of reality.
So what's Chaye Olam literally mean?
Life the
life of the world. The life of the world is growing out of us. This world, this room, is growing out of our subjective encounter with an objective reality. Okay? You're following that? Now that's really quite a trip, because as I've mentioned to you guys before, it's kind of like a dream. You're in a dream, and I'm sure you've all experienced yourself where you start to worry, like, well, this is really unpleasant. I hope this is a dream. And you try to wake yourself up, and you're kind of trapped between two worlds. You're in the dream, but you're kind of out of the dream, and you realize that this is a dream. So are you in the dream, or are you out of the dream? It's a really kind of freaky kind of experience to be in. But when you're in this dream and you wake up, you realize that the world you were in was actually in you. And so too, death is very similar. Death is simply waking up and capable of viewing reality in a new way, in a more expansive way, from a different angle. Okay? But a dog has the ability to hear sounds that we don't hear. A bat has the ability to see what we don't see. So there's reality here. Right? There's objective reality here, which we are not having anything to do with. We're meeting it, but our senses are not able to. We're not getting reception. Right? We're not getting reception. So what that means is the world you live in is growing out of you, and now you have to take responsibility of how you're meeting and your orientation to reality. Torah is claiming that Hashem looked in the Torah and created the world. What does that then mean? That when you learn Torah and live your life according to Torah, you will see reality more the way Hashem sees reality. In other words, you will tap into a perception that is more reflective of the objective truth. Love you. But will you ever get to the objective truth? No. It will always be your subjective perception of an objective truth, whether it's an idea or an objective item, right? But you are never going to get to, that's why science will never get to bedrock. Right, science will develop more microscopes, and they will reveal more worlds. And more, will they ever get to a place where, oh, here it is, we got it? That's what they thought. The atom was it. Right? But then it went deeper and deeper and deeper. The reason why you'll never get to the bedrock is because why?
You can't reach the objective.
Because you'll never get to the objective. It'll always be within the subjective, right? It'll always be within the subjective, and the subjective is Ein Sof. That's why we never talk about Hashem himself. We talk about Hashem as he appears to us, as he is revealed to us. That's why it's called Or Ein Sof. Whenever we say the Ein Sof, we always mean the Or Ein Sof. And why is it referred to the Ein Sof and not the Ein Reshit? Why is not referred to the not beginning? I mean, there's no beginning to Hashem. So why are you saying the no end? Because there is a beginning. Where is that beginning? Yeah? We're the beginning. We are the beginning. Right? But there's no end to this perception. Right? So this search for truth will be endless. Right? There is an objective reality. And that objective reality is facing us. And we are encountering that objective reality. You are right now meeting the essence of David Aaron. But you are not perceiving the essence. There is a connection. You are connecting with the essence of David Aaron. Right? But you're only perceiving your perception of David Aaron. Okay? And it's relative to who you are. Okay? Just like I've mentioned, you can only know me as a teacher. You cannot know me as a father. Right? You wouldn't want to. Okay? You can't know me as a father. You will not know me as a spouse. You will not know me. Because that's an angle that you have no access to. Okay? So when you get on a bus and you say driver, like the other day I got off a bus, and the person said, Nahag Todaraba. And I actually felt that was belittling, you know, to say driver, thank you very much. Because he's not a driver. You know, he might be an artist. Who knows who he is, right? He could be writing his PhD, but he needs to make some money. Well, you know, so I said thank you. Right, but again, maybe it's okay. But I felt uncomfortable to call the guy driver, nahag. But you're seeing a driver, but that's your perception. He's not a driver. He is who he is, but then he is who as you perceive him. But that's relative to you. Okay. Now this is incredibly important in terms of knowing Hashem, because you have to understand that Hashem is the ultimate object. Hashem is, so to speak, what's called in philosophy the thing itself. The thing itself, the thing of all things, so to speak. Again, forgive me for referring to Hashem as a thing, because of course he's not. But the essence of all essence, the reality of reality, that's what we mean when we say Hashem. Okay? And we will never, ever get to Hashem. We meet Hashem, and depending on our orientation to Hashem, will determine how Hashem will be revealed to us. Okay? And that's Nevuah. So when they see in the Navi sees a king sitting on a throne, what's going on there? Is he meeting Hashem or not? Is Hashem a man on a throne? For sure not. But is the Navi seeing a man on a throne? Yes. Does the Navi think Hashem is a man on a throne? Now he knows Hashem's not a man on a throne, but he knows that a man on a throne is how Hashem appears to him based on that kind of relationship he's having with Hashem right now. The way he's engaged in meeting Hashem right now. Right? That's why it's so important when you have images of Hashem that are angry. Hashem is angry. Is Hashem ever angry? No. So why does Hashem appear prophetically as angry? What's determining that image? What?
I think that's how we need to perceive Hashem.
Because of our relationship. We are relating to Hashem that if Hashem were a man, he would be angry, but he's not a man. But that image of anger is a reflection of us. Everything you see in reality is reflecting something about yourself. Okay? The reason why the table is brown is because of something about us. As we meet the essence called table. Right? But everything you meet and everybody you meet and every idea you meet is meeting something about who?
Yourself.
Right? So this becomes a very, very personal experience. To know anybody is very much about knowing something about yourself, because what you'll know about them is reflective of who you are and how you're relating to them. Okay? So it's saying very much about who you are. And so too in your relationship to Hashem. Right? How Hashem appears to you, how you experience Hashem, how you know Hashem, is very much a discovery about yourself in your relationship to Hashem. But that's huge. That's huge. That's what's bothering people, is they pick up the Torah and they think the Torah is describing how Hashem actually is. When the Torah is describing how Hashem is what? How Hashem is perceived. And that perception is relative to us. Are we doing mitzvahs? Are we living the midot properly? Are we learning Torah? And all that will determine how Hashem will be perceived by us. How we will experience Hashem. Okay? It's like I have a friend who was in a car accident and lost their taste. So they don't taste anything. Right? So for them, they live in a tasteless world. Okay? Yeah, so any other question? Yeah, Josh?
So how do we test Judaism justify codifying anything, like law or philosophy?
Because there is a science to perception. There is a science of if you approach the essence this way, this is how it will appear. And if you approach the essence that way, this is how it appear. If you view the essence this way, it'll appear this way. If you view the essence that way, it'll appear that way. Right? But we have to understand, we're not saying, well, it's all subjective, so what's the difference? There is a reality, there's an emes. That's called emes and amuna. Emes is reality as it is. Amuna is your perception of reality. You want emes and amuna to be united, which is kutcher bricha v'shchinte. You want as much as possible your perception of reality as much as possible reflecting subjectively the objective. In other words, you want to progressively become more objectively subjective or more subjectively objective of what you're seeing. Okay? So the question is, how objective is your subjective perception? It'll always be subjective. Right? The question is your subjective perception aligned with, or perhaps really out of whack with, and you're not even tuned in. You're not even tuned in. This is the claim of Torah life. Torah's claiming that through learning Torah, through davening, through mitzvahs, you are engineering your mind to interact with the divine in a way that the perception will be most reflective of the truth. But it'll still be subjective, and it'll still live in you. That world will be in you. Yeah.
So, like, midrashim that describe, let's say, Hashem getting angry, or Hashem wanting to destroy, let's say, the Jewish people.
It's not saying something about Hashem, it's saying something about us.
And that we're supposed to take from that, it's supposed to be our personal message of our growth, not someone.
That's right. It's not telling us about Hashem, it's telling us that when I interact with Hashem, ultimate essence, reality. This way, reality appears to be angry. Right? When I encounter reality that way, then reality appears to me as happy. Okay? But reality isn't changing. Ani Hashem lo shaniti. I am God, I don't change. What's changing is your subjective perceptions of me determined by how you're interacting with me. Like, let's look at a source down here. Look at... Look at number 6. This is from Rabbi Nachman. So there's a pasuk in Eicha that says, "Mipi elyon lo teitzei hara'ot." From the mouth of the higher one, the Eibishter, so to speak, will not come out bad. So what does he say? Habracha v'klala nase etzul adam. You're determining whether it's bracha or klala. Hashem's sending out the same light, right? Kefia kli sheyeshlo, depending on the vessel, will determine what's coming out of Hashem's mouth. Will it appear to you as a klala, or will it appear to you as a bracha? But it's not Hashem that's making this decision. Really, Hashem only sends bracha. But depending on how you perceive that bracha, the bracha could turn into a klala for you. That's why it says, "Kamo shekatuv re'ei anochi noten lifneichem bracha v'klala." Behold, I am putting in front of you the bracha and klala. It's up to you to determine how what you're experiencing is experienced as a bracha or a klala. Lifnechem, it's in front of you. Literally, daika. Specifically. Ki lifnei kodesh baruch hu, hu yotzeh or pashut. Hashem is only sending out a simple light. Hainu otiyot pshutim. It's as if he's sending out just the letters. Ukafi Adam Kain Nasat Seraph, but you decide how you're going to organize those letters. Right? Imu Adam Tov Naset Seraph Shabracha. Those letters will be organized and say and write bracha. Ve'im lav lefa, they'll write klala. Okay? Look at the next piece on the next side. This is from Rabbi Natan, right? Zel klal gadol, ki mipi elyon lo tetze. This is a big klal. This whole idea that from Hashem, ra'os don't come. Hashem is never sending you ra, right? Ki'im or pashut, he's just sending you simple light, abstract light. Pashut means it's abstract. It's not concretized. Ach lefi b'chinas ha'kliya mekabel et ha'or. But depending on the vessel that's receiving the light, you're wearing blue glasses, so the light looks blue. You're wearing rosy glasses, so the light looks pink. But it's not the light that's changing, it's your perception that's changing based on how you're interacting with the light. Kach nitzter ha'or b'tocho, that's how the light appears inside him. Ima kli hu b'leishemut az nitzer b'b'chinas bracha v'ken ever. If the kli, you, your perception, is shalem, then the light will appear as bracha. If the kli is not shalem, the light will appear as klala. In other words, there's just this beautiful music playing, and our minds are like, we are like radios, right? If we build our radio properly, plug it in, turn it on, tune it in, and we will hear that music, right? But if we don't, then that music will be perceived and experienced by us as terrible noise. I once mentioned to you that the Zohar says that the Torah was scheduled to be given during the generation of the flood. And because they were not ru'ui to be mekabel the Torah, the essence Torah came as a flood because Torah is water. Right? So rather coming in the perceptual image of Torah and wisdom, it came as the perceptual experience of a flood. But that's what's going on. It's a perception. Right? Now when people ask the question, well, how can I really believe that Noah made an ark and put all those animals in there? Right? Well, if that happened in your dream, would you have a problem with that? No, it's a dream. Well, that's the problem. This is like a dream. The world that you see is a perception. And just as that perception could be, really extraordinary things could happen in the perception of a dream, they can also happen in this perception. That's why we you know, in the times of Mashiach, v'hayinu kicholmim. We realize that we were like dreamers. Again, this isn't a dream, this is a perception. Okay? But again, we want to be very, very clear. There is an objective reality, and that's called Hashem. And then there's your perception of Hashem, that's called Olamot, worlds. Okay? And these are worlds of perception. Where are those worlds? Inside of us. Look at Rav Tzadok. We'll look at this a little bit deeper another time, but look at number 9. Look at the last line of number 9. V'nimsa ba'adam hem kol olamot atzilut bria yitzira asiya. The worlds are inside of you. This room is inside of you. You don't feel that way, right? And it would freak you out to continue to think that way. But you need to understand that the world as you see it is the reality as you look at it. Right? It's a reflection. It says something about you and how you're interacting with objective reality, i.e. Hashem. So Hashem is the reality. Emes. Right? That which is, or who is. I am that I am. Right? That which is, or that who is. The great is. Right? And all the religion are isms. Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism. These are approaches to the is. And there might be some validity to some of these approaches. Because we just want to engage in relationship with the great is. And the way the great is appears to us is very much the way we present ourselves to the great is. It's the way we orient ourselves, our lifestyle, our thinking, our speaking. It all engineers the kli of perception. Okay? So let's go to Rav Kook, number 2, right? He says like this, Afilo hashiva elakant, eino chobeket afilo et achelok yoter katan meuzan shel Yisrael. This whole movement towards Kantian philosophy doesn't even get a tiny bit of the power of the Jewish people. Meaning, we knew this long time ago. Emet ha-davar, shemeaz me'olam yadanu. It's true. We knew from the beginning of time. Ve'lo itzrachnu le-kant shigalu lanu razeh. We didn't need Kant to teach us this secret. Shekol ha-karot ha-neshiyot. That all perceptions, human perception, hem subjektiyot, yichusiyot. We don't need Kant to tell us that all human perception is relative and subjective. Zot hi hamalchus. That's what's called in Kabbalah the sphere of malchus. Kli delet la migarma klum. It's a vessel that in and of itself it has nothing. It's a perception of an emes. Right? Without being a perception of the emes in and of itself, perception is nothing. Right? So perception is nothing unless it's a perception of an emes. Okay? Vizati beit hakneset. The malchus is referred to in Kabbalah and the Zohar, and the code word for malchus is the beit kneset, because it gathers things together. Right? It's the beit kibul. It's the receptacle that receives. Right, just like your the radio is a receiver. So there is an objective reality, there is an objective music, but depending on the receiver will determine how that objective reality will be perceived by us. Right? Or hayireach, hamekabelet maorot. Malchus is referred to in the Zohar as the moon, because the moon is reflecting the sun. Right? And that's why our time is according to Rosh Chodesh, is according to the moon, telling us that we live in our perception of an emes, of a reality. We're not existentialists that are saying there is no objective reality, it's just whatever you think. It's not whatever you think. There's an objective reality, but you will never touch the objective reality. You will encounter it, what will emerge out of you will be your subjective perception of the reality, your taste of it, your feelings about it, the color of it, the texture of it, what it arouses out of you, okay? But it's not it. It's just like I've mentioned to you before, I don't know what gravity looks like, I've never touched gravity, I will never ever touch gravity. But how do I know gravity in my life? Because I feel a force pulling me up, I'm down, right? I feel something pulling me down. So that's a perception. I have a perception of downness, right? And I don't know what Hashem looks like, and I never will know what Hashem looks like. That's why Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't see my face. Moshe was saying, I want to see emes. Hashem saying, you can only see your perception of emes, and that's called the back of my head. That's the perception, okay? And so too is the Areach is a reflection of the Shemesh. The Shemesh in Kabbalah correlates to Tiferet, which correlates to Emes, and the Areach correlates to Malchus, which correlates to Amunah, which correlates to subjective perception. In other words, in our vocabulary, the Shekhinah, or Malchus, is the root of phenomena. Okay? The root of phenomena. Is the Shekhinah objective? Yes. Right? The Shekhinah is an objective reality. Right? And when the Shekhinah meets Kodesh Baruch Hu, so to speak, that gives birth to a what? But what does it give birth to? Now, a subjective world. Right? A subjective perception. Right? So, don't get me wrong. The perceiver is a chelik elokam imal. You are a neshama. A neshama is a little, so to speak, a piece of God. God, so to speak, in this language is what? Reality, the object. So you, as a neshama, are meeting Hashem, who's the nishmat neshama, the soul of souls, and in that meeting, what is born? Depending on how you meet how this encounter, what the nature of this encounter, what is born out of that encounter? a subjective perception, a world. That's called, not a reality. Don't use the word reality. Reality is the emes. The world is the emuna. It's the belief, it's the perception. From omanut, it's how it's portrayed. Right? Emuna is how it's portrayed from omanut. Okay? So you, as a neshama, are a little piece of the object. A little piece of the object is encountering the object, so to speak. I mean, forgive us for describing Hashem as an object, but just for the sake of this terminology. And in that meeting, and depending on that meeting, and depending on how you've engineered yourself for the most accurate perception possible, that it will always be in the realm of perception, that is what we're trying to do. Yichud Kutcha Bricha V'Shchintei. We want our perceptions to be aligned with reality. It's called mental health, right? That what I perceive and what is are lined up. But they're not the same. My perception is not the reality. But it's my perception of reality. Now the question is, how objective is your subjective perception of the objective? Got that one? How objective is your subjective perception of the objective, of the emes, of what is, or who is, to be more correct? Okay, but that's why people get all stuck, because they open up the Torah and they start reading things that really disturb them. Hashem gets angry and Hashem does this and they don't know what to do with that, right? But Hashem appearing that way is because of what?
Our perception of such.
About, it's because of us. Because the way we are is determining the way Hashem appears to us. Hashem will appear to us angry because there's something that's off about us. Okay? And who knows what the original Torah looked like, right? This is the Torah as it's perceived after the fall, right? After Chet Egel, right? But I told you, and we won't go into right now, but the whole Pardes story of the four rabbis went into Pardes, and one went crazy, and one went, one became a heretic, and one died, and only Rabbi Kiva came out. Because they wanted to see the Torah in the world of Bria. There is a Torah. There is an absolute emes. That's the essence called Torah. The Torah that's in the Ark, is that the Torah? What is that? That's our perception of the Torah. Okay? Based on the worldview we're in. If we were to move into a different worldview, then the Torah would look different. See, the Rizal says that they wanted to see what the Torah looked like before the Shviras Akeli, before the Shviras Aluchot, right? Which was the Torah in the world of Bria. They were in the world of Bria, in the mindset of Bria. After Chet Egel, they fell into a different lower mindset where their perceptions are much more skewed and diminished. So they wanted to see the Torah with the eyes of Bria, from the orientation of Bria, using the kli, so to speak, of Bria. They wanted to get the emes of Atzilut, so to speak, the Torah of Atzilut, as it can be viewed, because Atzilut in our world would be called noumena, and Bria, Yetzir, and Asiya would be phenomena. Okay? So when Rabbi Akiva said, when we get to the pure marble, don't say water, water, the pure marble was what? The first luchot. The Shesha Tahor, the Luchot were 6 cubits high. So he said the Shesha Tahor, hinting to the pure 6. They wanted to see the Luchos, the first Luchos. And through meditation and altering their state of mind, state of consciousness, they're going to now meet the essence Torah, the Emes, with these new eyes from this perception. Right? But what happened? When Rabbi Akiva said, when we get to the pure marble, don't say water, water, because he knew they're going to say, wait a second, there's two Torahs. There's two Torahs. This couldn't be the same Torah. Right? But it is the same Torah. Right? There's one Torah with different perceptions that seem contradictory. Right? Is the table static or is the table dynamic? If you're looking at the table with these eyes, it's static. If you're looking at the table with microscopic vision, it's dynamic. Which one is it? It's neither one of them. That's a perception. What it is, and we don't know. We only know our perception of it. Right? So Rabbi Akiva said, when we get to the pure marble, when we get to the pure six, when we get to the original Torah, as it was perceived in the eyes of Bria, don't freak out and say, wait a second, this couldn't be the same Torah. It's so different than the world of the Torah that we know in the world of Asiya, in the world of action. Well, what happened is one rabbi went crazy. He couldn't deal with the contradiction. How could these be the same manifestation, the different manifestations of the same essential Torah? One rabbi died. I'm not going back. I'm not going back to that Torah. I'm not going back to that world. I'm not going back to that state of mind, that state of consciousness. Because right? That's what this is, a state of consciousness. Another rabbi said, oh, now I know the emes. Right? And I'm going to live according to that in this state of consciousness. I'm going back to Asiya, living by the Torah of Bria. Can't do that. Right? That's a heretic. Only Rabbi Akiva was able to deal with the fact that the essential Torah, the emes, is the emes. And then there's the kli, and the way we engineer the kli, engineer the reception, will determine how the emes is manifest to us. And that answers all kinds of things like machlokis. How can you have a machlokis? There's one emes, right? Well, one rabbi, his orientation to the emes is this way, and therefore it appears this way. And it is the true perception for him. But then another rabbi is orienting and meeting the emes this way, and that's the true perception for him. Okay? But which one is the emes? It's beyond those perceptions. They're both valid perceptions from those different... Yeah. Okay, that's it for today. We will continue more on Thursday. We don't have this on Wednesday.